Across Divides is a podcast that discusses challenges faced by communities around the island of Ireland. In this season, we speak with young people about what peace means to them over a quarter of a century since the signing of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. We discuss the challenges faced by present-day youth and the ways they're making their voices heard. Identity is complex and evolving for young people on the island of Ireland. It is still influenced by deep-rooted histories, but is increasingly being shaped by openness and diversity as young people define themselves on their own terms. In this episode of Across Divides, we're looking at what identity means to young people, how it is expressed and supported through education, youth work, and governance. We are joined by Leo Jun Chow, a student of psychology at University College Dublin, Dylan O'Sullivan, a teacher from County Clare and a member of the British Council, and Dervla Larkin from Youth Action Northern Ireland. June, could you start by telling us a bit about yourself and what's brought you here today?
I'm June, and I'm currently studying psychology in University College Dublin, and I'm in second year right now. So that means I actually came for college. So I came in September of 2023, which is around 2 years from now. And I would say I'm still kind of new to Ireland, but not as new as before. And also I came from Malaysia, and I'm a Malaysian Chinese myself. So I can also speak, like, my mother tongue is actually Chinese, not English.
Thank you, Jun. Could you tell us a little bit about what identity and belonging mean for you as an international student studying in Dublin?
I realized that a lot of international students like me, we came here to study, but we find it so difficult to even feel belong here. I mean, it's quite natural that you never feel belong because you're not even born in here. But in terms of like finding help, finding support, mental health services, etc., we often feel like we won't even know that they exist for us as well. Like when I know about Jigsaw and I know they have free services, I didn't know it's also available for international students. I just thought like it's only for the people that are here and not for us. So I feel like if I will be able to be here and speak up for it, just to let people know that even though we are not Irish, we still have the right to get support and help that's available.
Thank you, June, for sharing your experience. And we will come back in a little while to look at how youth work has helped you and other students to deal with issues of housing and employment whilst being international students on the island of Ireland. Let's come on to Dervla. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and how your work connects with issues of peacemaking and identity?
Hi, my name is Dervla. I am the Technical Theatre Coordinator here at Youth Action. Whilst I've been living in Belfast for about 6 years, I was originally born and came from Cross Maglen, so I lived right on the border of the north and the south. I've primarily been working in the arts as a freelance worker, but recently came to Youth Action in November. It's part of a new set of skills and actually getting to work with young people again.
Thank you, Dervla. And finally, Dylan.
My name is Dylan and I live in Clare. So I've lived there pretty much my whole life. And as someone who was born in 1998, I count my blessings, but I was born that year because obviously 3 months afterwards, the Good Friday Agreement was signed. So I've really only known peace in my time. So I've been fortunate in ways, and I champion multiculturalism, and I would like to definitely provide more opportunities to those who may not be so fortunate. I definitely think that through education and absolutely addressing current affairs, that is definitely some way we can help bring the country together in the face of divisiveness.
I'll maybe start actually with a question for Dylan, just to kick things off, because I know that you're part of the British Council. You can maybe tell us a bit about what that is. Last year, you went to Poland to commemorate the 25th anniversary of that agreement. Within the context of that work, why is the Good Friday Agreement still important to you now?
In terms of what I went to commemorate, that was Film 25, which was based in Dublin, and it brought people from Wales, from Northern Ireland, from the Republic, from England as well, and all of us were pretty much born the same year. In terms of why it's important to me now, I suppose even if we were to take recently what Senator George Mitchell said, that although this has become a country of peace, there is still a bit more that could be done. I suppose peace of mind, peace of body, and peace of soul, if you can cement that all together, that is where we need to be looking.
Dervla, the young people you work with were all born after 1998. What does peace mean to them now, and how do they relate to the Belfast Good Friday Agreement?
I myself was born in 2000, so it was just post-agreement and sort of seeing how that actually still haunted my upbringing, because I grew up in a town that is particularly Republican based and would still have that sort of bias, I would say. So that was something that would not necessarily affect how I would interact with other people, but it was would always be something that is in the back of my head, that it's like, yes, there is peace, but, and it's always the but. And I can sort of still see that with the young people as well, because there is still segregated religious teaching schools. It's when you consider that it's like when it's an integrated or mixed gender school, it's supposed to be considered non-denominational, but then there's less facilities that are still being given towards those schools, and they're considered high schools. Not very many of them are considered grammar schools, where they're supposed to be getting that sort of higher level of education. You can still see that in some of the ways that the kids are interacting with each other. How they like will interact with each other in a social setting is always very different, because they could turn around and ask you what postcode you're from, because that will be how they can tell what sort of background you're from. Living in that sort of world, it's like I'm bringing them into a sort of hub and art space, is to show how much more similar they are than their actual differences. And you can really see in the friendship groups that are built and how they're actually generally quite mixed groups, that it is something that is possible through art.
What Dervla is saying about the awareness that young people in Northern Ireland have about the peace process, I wonder how that compares with your experience, Dylan, as a teacher in Limerick.
It's interesting that you should ask, because, say, I live in Bunratty, which is a very small village, but I would have gone into primary school in a lovely town called Shannon. Children, I suppose, during the Troubles would have migrated over there. So a lot of families from people who grew up during the Troubles would have facilitated there, and they would have obviously had some awareness of it. But I even remember when I was in primary school, or even when I was in secondary school, you all have a general understanding of what happened during the Troubles in Northern Ireland. So I think they would definitely have a knowledge of it. But in terms of talking about it openly and honestly, I think that's another story, and they don't tend to touch it that much.
I find it interesting how discussions about peace building on this island are so often framed as being historical. We're learning through this podcast about how peace is still relevant today, but its meaning for young people has evolved as youth issues have changed. One of the things that's evolved is what identity means for young people. And while the Protestant Catholic binary is still relevant, identity and belonging have changed as the island becomes more culturally diverse. June, you mentioned the lack of a sense of belonging that you experienced when you first arrived in Dublin. How have you been able to work through that and cultivate a place for yourself as an international student?
Personally, I think what helps me most is volunteering. I volunteer with Jigsaw, and I also volunteer with Text About It by Spun Out. It's an online helpline, anonymous helpline. I would say UCD itself is a good uni. Actually, it's a global university, and there are a lot of ways to get involved, and they emphasize a lot on equality, diversity, and inclusion. So in that way, I actually feel like I'm quite privileged in that sense, but it's not what happens for other students. And I remember that the first moment that I actually felt like I belong here was during the mental health day, where I was with Jigsaw to do like mental health promotion throughout the city. And working with them, like alongside with them, that was the first time I actually feel like I belong here. I think one of the reasons I kind of struggled to feel belong was like, I don't know a lot of context in Irish culture and history. And whenever they talk about things that are maybe like politics or like very cultural stuff around like Irish culture, I'll feel like I will feel loop and I wouldn't be able to get engaged in a conversation. So there was actually one thing that I'm quite curious, and I think it would be a very good opportunity to ask about that in this podcast today. So I recently came across a video on YouTube talking about a Northern Ireland specifically, but she was talking about it from a political and economics perspective. And she talked about Brexit and the segregation between Northern Ireland and South Dublin. So like, one thing that I'm curious, even though I didn't understand everything of it and I'm not really clear of what happened, but one thing I'm quite curious is like, so this is my first day in Northern Ireland and I'm not sure like, what do people here feel like? Do you guys feel like you're an Irish or you're British?
I was born in the north part of the border as a, I would say, a cultural Republican in that sense. I grew up in an Irish-speaking primary school, which had just been established the year before I went. And then I went immediately to an all-girls Catholic grammar school, participated in all of the particular Irish traditional music scene. So all of my life, I would say, I grew up with being Irish. So then coming up to Belfast and being completely immersed in an area that was very clearly and visually separate, because even from coming from the motorway to come up to Belfast, you reach the monument just off of the Foothills Road. Even within that area, you can see where British flags are, or if there are Irish names on the actual street signs, as opposed to really using Irish flags. It's very clear as to where the definitions lie. And you then, by association, could say it's like, oh, they're from this particular background because they are flying this flag. Or quite commonly now, it's the like Palestine and Israel flags and who is flying what. And you don't have to speak to people anymore to be able to tell that. I sometimes work for a company called Northern Ireland Opera. That's a very particular, even in like a folklore study, would say that that's a very classist type of show because most of the work is in a different language and is considered high art. And I do put that in parentheses because I think it's particularly inaccessible form of music. But even when we go to rehearsals in a particular area in Belfast, I will change my name on my taxis because I know from the booking form that the taxi driver will be able to know where I'm from. Like, I would still to this day lie about where I'm from because I can put it pinpoint a different place that is religiously or politically ambiguous enough that it just will cut the conversation from there. Whilst the topic is about living in peace in an Irish sense, I'm going to say, yes, peace in Irish is Seachán, but I would never say that I feel at peace, which would be at Suvnius. I never feel that.
When you say you're being put on the position to talk about either one identity, might know what identities that you're talking about?
So let's say if we were to take Catholicism and Protestantism. Catholicism, obviously you're embracing Christianity, but you take all the teachings from Rome. Protestantism, pretty much the same thing, only you renounce what is, not that you renounce what's going on in Rome, but you don't embrace it. So the idea of Protestants being mostly British identifying and Catholics being mostly Irish identifying, nationalists as well.
The three of you have all come from very different backgrounds, from the border region of Northern Ireland to County Clare and Malaysia. And identity is something that means something different for each of you. It's also something that's multi-layered, and each person's experience of a particular identity is likely to be different from that of another person. You mentioned earlier, June, that your experience as an international student was different from the experience of others. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
To be honest, for my case, I would say I'm quite a lucky one because I kind of get protected and have the privilege under UCD. But I've heard like other students who are let's say, studying in DC or like under other smaller universities that might have a different experiences. So one of the issues that I have heard was about housing crisis. And I mean, it's happening everywhere. But like, so some of the examples that I heard was because of the expensive rental in Dublin, and also because of we got limited working hours per week during study week. So we only have 20 hours to work, which is not enough to afford the rental and doing expenses at all. And because of that, a lot of students have to compromise and try to find like cheap places to stay in. So a lot of the landlords, they take advantage of that and they kind of have like a big room, and maybe it's supposed to be only 4 people to stay in the room, but they'll let 10 people to stay in the room and they earn from there. And so the students can like also pay a cheaper rental fee, which is kind of like a vicious cycle that always goes on. And one of the issues was about sex for rent phenomenon. I personally have never came across this, but I have heard like students who actually have experience of it. And to this day, it's still not criminalized. It's still not something that is mentioned officially that it is illegal. Also that I think the one of the big issues is the awareness is very low about this issue. And I think it's like, let's say if I'm an international student and I don't have like enough financial support from my family, and I mean I'm studying in Dublin, and I need to find a place to stay, and I didn't know about this issue that's going on, and someone offered me, I think that's a very high chance that you fall into it, because you're in that situation and you didn't know about this issue at all, and just it just came to you personally. If this will be bring to the surface and the awareness will be raised about this issue and that people know about this is going on and this is not right. And I think that will help a lot of students to be more aware of this trap.
You said that you're quite privileged in not encountering the issues that other international students face, but there are still challenges for you on a daily basis.
Let's say if I go to a city center, there are multiple times that I face racism. Maybe like most of the times it's like kids, like teenage boys. And I mean, I look Chinese and that's quite obvious, I would say. Or maybe it's not just Chinese by itself. Like people talk to me like konnichiwa, onin, that's Japanese or Korean, or they'll call me like Chinese or whatever. So these are like minor things that happen on the street as well. So I don't think it's like the major issue compared to the sex for rent issue, but this is still small little things that international students will face even to this day. And it's quite like unavoidable, to be honest.
June, you've shared some of the challenging experiences that you face around how people respond negatively to and often weaponize the identity of others. I'd like to take a look at how young people can be empowered and celebrate their identities. Dervla, for the young people that you work with, what does identity mean to them and how is it expressed?
I would say that the young people, interestingly enough, I would say are not as politically minded, because their struggles are absolutely right. They're different struggles. The one that we see quite a lot is their understanding of gender, particularly with any of like the older young people. I would say that like what they consider as sexual freedom is like their largest part. Like their sexual orientation is something that they are trying to come to terms with. Those are the issues that they are trying to face within themselves. We could end up having young people who want to identify with another sex, or if they're non-binary, that we would generally accept that because that's what the young person is expressing to us. They want to feel like it is a safe space. So that's something that we provide. It might not necessarily be something that they're either getting in school or they're getting at home. And especially because we're also mixed ability groups, you'll see that there will be quite a lot of children would have like attention deficits. So sometimes they will be a lot more perhaps expressive in class. If that's not something you're being constantly introduced to, it might be something that has been jarring, and it's having to address that, saying, yeah, this is okay for them to do. But then when you have another child who's saying that it's quote unquote weird behavior, it's then tackling that to say, it's just like, well, no, this is how they express themselves. But kind of going back onto myself a bit and talking about how gender is important issues for them when there are decisions made by political groups that are leading these discussions, they're not actually being heard. And for years, even when I was a young person in those groups meeting with politicians, and then when it comes to the section where the young people are speaking and half of the political leaders have then left the conference because they have other things to do, then you're not actually listening. So it's actually giving them a voice and then giving them the platform to be heard.
Dylan, as a teacher, would you have any reflections on what Dervla's just said?
We have a very diverse range of students in the school that I've been working in. And I think more often than not, the students tend to be very accepting, although that there are definitely circumstances where there are other students who are not so fortunate. And I think that that is definitely something that is an issue for today and definitely needs to be fixed. So the question is how, and I think that this comes back to what I was saying about social cohesion. And I think that through activities like you have your drama there, and I think that the whole idea of creativity, we can come together culturally where we fail to do so politically speaking.
That sort of creativity that Dylan is mentioning there is something that comes through your work, Dervla. I'm wondering what supports there are for young people facing challenges around identity and how they are able to express themselves and have their voices heard.
I come from a particular branch where it's about creative expression. So quite a lot of my initial work is to see what they want to produce, because it provides them the voice that they want to use in particular issues. One of the things that kind of comes up quite a lot recently, and it was actually quite interesting to see, was when we were hosting part of International Women's Day. So we had different groups from our Derry Londonderry branch, it is, which would be classified as the Northwest for our particular youth action branch. And then we had youth groups that came from Newry as well. And they all came up to be part of the march under the youth action branch. We had a section up in the space where we had the groups making their own banners. And the particular groups that I work with are called the Rainbow Factory, because it helps produce magic and dreams, and it's what we can do for them. They were very hands-on in actually creating their banners. And then one of the particular banners, it was quite funny, but also had like a really powerful message in the fact that it was literally just woman's hips and pair of underwear. And it was, get your paws off my silky drawers, which is a quote from, I can't remember the name of the actual film, but it was something that the kids thought was brilliant. It was what spoke to them, because it was not making light of the issue, but it was pointing out that it's like, this is how they want to express their voice in that moment. And we had another member, a staff member from another group, who said that it was not appropriate to have that banner go up as part of the organization. And we had to sit down and talk to them, because we all had to discuss as a group, where is it appropriate to tell them that that's not fun, that's not good? Where do you draw a line allowing their level of expression as well? Outside of youth action, I had trained as a youth support worker for the Education Authority, and particularly was working with the TBUC programs, which is Together Building United Communities. So part of my exercises was always introducing different cultural sides of that. So that would be, oh, you have an Irish dancing course in 1 week, but then the next week you'll have the Highland dancers coming in and introducing Scots Gaelic as an actual like taster session, and then having maybe like an Irish class, so that they're constantly being exposed to that different culture. That's also not really something that I have ever seen coming from a Northern school background, because like I sort of said in my introduction, a lot of the schools are still quite segregated. And even through that, it's still quite class-based, that it's grammar schools are still considered your single sex high achieving schools, to the high schools, which you will actually find has more mixed background students and international members of the community, I would say.
I find it really interesting the ways that you describe how creativity can help young people to have a voice on the issues that influence them. And then at the other end of the scale, having ideas imposed. I'm wondering where the balance lies between educating young people around particular ways of being and living in society versus giving them the freedom to guide the issues that affect them. Perhaps, June, we could come back to you because you're involved in a number of forums and groups designed to give people a space to have their voices heard. These groups can be a safe space for young people who share particular identities to be able to discuss common issues and challenges and be able to work towards solutions. They can also be ways of reinforcing and amplifying shared experiences.
So, for example, we have Malaysian society, Indian society, Chinese society, Japanese society. So I think that helps a lot on helping us to feel belong. And in terms of like getting our voices heard, I think the student union is a way. All of the students have the opportunity to give our opinions through a survey. We always have surveys every semester, and you can basically talk about any opinions on there for every specific modules.
Are those kinds of forums and surveys enough to address some of the serious issues you were talking about earlier, like housing and employment?
There's actually one, but I think that wasn't for Sex for Rent. It was for housing crisis, but in particular, the on-campus accommodation, because like it's actually quite expensive to stay in UCD. Like I used to stay there and I used to give like 1.3k euros per month for rent. And my room was, to be fair, my room was one of like the good ones on campus, but the price range is always like 1,000 to 1,003. And mine is like a suite single room, but I share a kitchen with six other people, which is actually not bad, but 1.3k per month is very expensive. And like a lot of students did voice up about this. So the student union, they have a movement about it, and we got to like vote on to make the change. So I'm not sure how is this going, but this is definitely a way for us to voice out for any changes.
You actually had something really interesting talking about like the society's being able to give you a voice as in university, because when I'm working with young people, they're in that sort of age bracket where they have their student councils, and they offer that as a platform for the children and young people to actually voice their concerns. Or one of the things that you could possibly talk about quite a lot in climate change is about recycling and what services are available to schools. But I do remember quite a lot, even at the time that I was there in school councils, that it was very much like it was a token voice place. Your opinions weren't actually being implemented into the school. And especially now that with gender identity becoming something that's quite prevalent for young people these days, one of the things is about the actual school uniforms and what's available to students. Because in female orientated single sex schools, quite a lot of the uniforms are either pinafores or skirts, which for somebody who is going through a level of gender dysphoria and does not feel particularly comfortable wearing a skirt and wants to wear trousers, but it's not been assigned a part of the uniform, it's something that is now starting to be addressed. I don't know if there's ever going to be a complete solution to that, because it's whilst the students can raise the concern, it's then turning around to the people who are even above teachers and your head teachers, it's your board of governors and your actual, the real people at the top that are making the decisions to say that, yes, that's allowed. So it's really fascinating that it's like you feel that your voice gets heard through the student unions. And I would say whilst I was at uni, that was definitely the case. But when I'm working with young people now, it doesn't feel like it's actually being heard. And I, as a teacher, I really do want to hear your perspective on that front as well.
Dervla, I would agree with a lot of what you've just said there and what June has definitely said. So there is a sense that the university, let's say I was at Mary Immaculate College for my undergrad, which is a lovely university, but even when I was working as a class rep, so I was working my second year as a class rep for TEFL students for about 120 students. And one student made an address to me was in terms of his relationship with his landlord. And it was about 2 weeks before the end of the month. So he wasn't due to pay up. But then the landlord came up, in his words, not in the soberest of moods, and basically threw a bottle at him and said, pay up now or you get out. So he addressed that to me and I brought it forward and I told the vice president of the students' union. So yeah, there is a sense that because of the fact that there are people coming in there with less privileges, say he would have been from Russia and he would only just recently set up, that there is a level where they feel they can get away with it. And I sometimes feel that it's a mirror image of the government at times, you know, that when they are going to deal with human rights or questions of equality, you may see that through the university at a later stage as well.
We've talked about culture and identity and what these things mean today on the island of Ireland. Identity brings people together and creates a sense of belonging, but it has also been at the core of conflict on this island and also influences many of the issues that are faced by young people today. I'd like to ask you all, what is needed now to ensure that the needs of young people are met where there are challenges and complexities around multiple layers of identity and the creative and imaginative ways that an increasingly diverse collective of people are able to flourish together on this island?
One of the ways that we as a particular organization have been able to provide those sort of platforms, because we have pillars that we are using as teaching methods. And one of those would be in leadership and peace building. So while I would say that my life and all of my actual learning background in schools has been very one-sided of, you are probably someone who fits into this bracket of identity, and that it's like, going back to it, it's the idea of like a cultural nationalist. And that is something that you are just kind of told that is what you are supposed to feel or believe. But also there is this whole other option, and it's always been taught as a sort of gray area. And I think now, coming back into youth work after however many years it was, seeing that that's not really the identity issue for these young people anymore. It's about how they identify themselves and not as a group, because they can come together as a group, but it's now about how they can voice their own frustrations or things that brings them joy, essentially. One of the particular cases that I like to think about is a young woman. She has autism, and part of her ways of expressing, she takes time to process what she's thinking and what she's saying, because she is always conscious about what other people think. And in that sense, she became her own worst enemy. But through her work here and through all of the different courses that she's been able to do, she was also part of the International Women's Day March, speaking out as a representative of the organization, but mostly about themselves. And her speech was really powerful, because she was pointing out that there is such a lack of services in the medical world about our understanding of autism, but autism and other learning difficulties that women are just kind of brushed under the rug. And the fact that the change needs to happen now so that it's available to everyone, so that it doesn't become something that is brushed under the rug. It doesn't become an issue. It just becomes something we're aware of.
June, leading on from what Dervla has said, can I ask where you have seen young people empowered to express and celebrate their individual identity?
I think it's quite natural that like international students are closer with international students, because we all know that we are kind of like different, and that's why that brings us together. Like our difference brings us together. And I think what makes me happy actually is when someone, regardless of their background, they are interested of my background, and like the process of sharing each other's culture and celebrating it. I think that's what empowers us a lot, and remembering that our unique background is what values, and also bringing back to the ways that we can raise our voices. So other than the student unions, one of the ways that I realized that makes me feel more belong to Ireland is the Irish Council for International Students. So I came across that, like, I think it was last year, and then I joined as a student advisor member. So I think that's where I get to learn a lot of other international student stories, and I get to voice out about our problems. And even though it's not like after we say it, there'll be immediate changes, but having a platform for us to acknowledge it, to talk about it, the process does makes us feel like at least we have the ability to do something nonetheless.
Dylan, in the school where you work, how do you see diverse identities celebrated?
We had an event there a couple of weeks back where we were bringing together different foods, different clothes from all different backgrounds. So there were people there from Brazil, people from India, people from Ukraine. They were all bringing different dishes to the school, and we had the hall open there. So they were all able to communicate in their languages and celebrate just who they were, essentially.
Peacemaking is a long and multifaceted process. 25 years on from the Belfast Good Friday Agreement, it's still very much underway and needs to adapt as new issues arise, along with new opportunities for people on this island to live rich lives alongside one another. That includes recognizing, supporting, and celebrating the huge diversity of identities and cultures that now exist on this small island.
It's like moving a Rice Krispie from one bowl to another, but you've a massive bowl of Rice Krispies. Progress is happening. It's just because you can't see it doesn't mean it's not happening for them.
Thank you for listening to Across Divides. If you would like to learn more about the project, go to icommunityhub.org. iCommunity is a collaborative all-island project run by The Wheel and the Northern Ireland Council for Voluntary Action. It is supported by the Department of Foreign Affairs Shared Island Civic Society Fund and the Shared Island Unit in the Department of the Taoiseach. This series was created thanks to the collaborative efforts of the National Youth Council of Ireland and Youth Action Northern Ireland. Thanks also to the Shared Island Youth Forum and to all of the guests who took part in the podcast.